Justine, there's a kind of a succession of very good-looking men on the programme today.
Which I like. That's good for me. Works for me.
David Tennant, mm-hmm. David Morrissey, mm-hmm. George Clark.
Nice.
Yeah, I think
They'd all be dinner party guests at my fantasy dinner party.
It would be a fantasy because they would not accept the invite.
I'm coming. You know? I'm See? Coming whenever. I'm ready.
Really?
There's yeah. one on the
this
list.
This is a verbal contract. You are yeah. saying now, in front of the entire audience, that you will go to Justine Green's house for dinner.
I'd love to.
There you go. See, Richard.
What are you cooking, Justine?
What do you like?
Well, whatever whatever your specialty might be.
Mexican is my
specialty. Mexican's good. Very good. Mm. Yeah, I like a bit of chili.
Yeah.
God, he's such a good actor, isn't he, though? Huh? Promising to come round to your house.
I think you've been proven wrong. I'm taking him at his word.
I can't wait.
So you can see David Tennant and all of our guests, starting with David, if you go to Beat. Look, we've got these little cameras here.
Wow, there's a bank of cameras in this. Radio is no longer you just turn up. You know, you've got to brush your hair these days, haven't you?
Yeah, I know. What happened to the glory days when you didn't have to put in any effort at all?
Exactly.
We've messed everything up.
You really have. What is this multimedia platform nonsense? This craziness.
It is. Go to bbc.co.uk/5live to take part in the craziness. It's worth it. You've dressed very well, if I may say so.
Well, I've not just been doing radio today.
Oh, is that right? Okay. we're going to talk about a number of things, including your new drama, which is terrific.
Oh, good.
Single Father, it's a four-part series.
It is.
It's for the BBC, isn't it?
It is. BBC One.
BBC One, it's really good. It's moving. You
yeah.
know?
But not in a mawkish, sentimental way. I think it's very true. And it's a brilliant script, I think.
All right, we'll talk about that in a second. Now, let's set up a texter. Always set up a texter, David, the listening community at this point in the show.
I bet it's not just a text. I bet it's also a Twitter and a Facebooker and a...
I know.
It's this multi-platform madness. I can't cope, Richard.
I know.
You cool.
It must have been
well
more fun in a way when as a radio presenter, there were no cameras and there were no texts and emails or tweets, and it really was just you locked in a room doing your own thing.
Yeah. I suppose it's probably still like that if you're on at 5 a.m, isn't it?
I'll tell you what has happened now with almost every radio and TV format that's live has to have interaction in it.
Yeah.
Be quite nice for there to be a new entertainment
TV
show.
Are you exhausted by the interaction forced upon you?
No, it's not forced upon me, but it'd be quite nice for a new entertainment show not to have any interaction at all.
Yeah.
Although I'll say this about Twitter, and here's what separates you from the other guests that have been on the show this year, is there's just been this general excitement, this buzz on Twitter all week about you coming on here.
I'm very thrilled by that.
Yeah, it's there.
Good.
So you wanted to be, you wanted to play Doctor Who when you were a child. I think that's fair to say.
I think that's fair to say, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Here is today's texter. It's what did you want to be when you were a kid, but what are you now? What did you want to be when you were a child, but what are you now? 85058, bacon@bbc.co.uk. And because it's Thursday, we're doing this.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Help. Richard, can you and your experts help me deter squirrels which are digging up holes in my otherwise pristine lawn to bury their nuts for the winter?
Help! I've got this fly buzzing around my kitchen. I want to get rid of it, but I don't want to kill it. How can I get it out of the house humanely?
Help! I made popcorn in a metal pan and can't remove the black spot stain.
Won't you please help me?
The solution for cleaning problems is almost always vinegar.
Certainly, yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Normally white wine vinegar, but vinegar.
Yeah.
So it is the return of our popular and prestigious help section. We heard there from David, Debbie and Andy struggling with squirrels, flies and popcorn pans. Tell me now what you're struggling with. And between this week's panel of assembled experts and you, the wider listening community, the family, will try and see you right. Today there's a focus on doing up your house with George Clark, Restoration Man, Phil Vickery on cooking, and pets with Emma Milne. 85058. David, you can think in the meantime, if you like, about any practical problems that you have.
And it's good. For a second there, I thought I'd become a de facto member of your panel. I was thinking, I don't have a clue. I'm not going to be helpful to anyone. I'm glad there are other more... educated and established people coming in to
you're lucky out. You're on at 2 and not 3, because often the 3 o'clock guest just gets
just
forced
rolls
onto the
on.
Panel.
Just yeah. roll, right, it's just as well.
Yeah, people phoning you up saying, oh, I can't get the stain off my kitchen work surface, David, what should I do? And you would have had to have come up with an answer.
Probably depends on the surface.
Yeah. Sounds like you do know your stuff.
No, I just know how to move a question away from me as far as possible.
Are you a practical man at home?
No, not particularly. Not entirely impractical. And once I've, you know, acquired a skill, I tend to hold on to it.
Okay.
But I still find my now very advanced years, there are still some quite fundamental things I haven't quite got to grips with.
How old are you?
I will be 40 next year.
Will you?
It pains me to say that out loud.
Will you really?
Yeah, 40 in April I will be. 39 at the moment, for those of you who can't do the maths.
You don't look it. And I've said some flattering things already, but I mean, I do mean it.
Well,
you don't appear to have aged since, I'd say, Casanova. You look identical.
I don't feel like I've aged since about 20 years ago, but I suppose it does happen.
You must moisturise, right?
Not as much as makeup artists would tell you you're supposed to. Do you moisturise?
Yeah, about twice a day.
Do you?
Yeah.
That's very good.
Why is my editor laughing his head off at that? He just finds that really funny. Oh, you moisturise as well. Look, every single person in the room next door, that's four of them, all put their hands up. Even though none of them look like they moisturise, David. You're using the wrong brand. anyway, we don't need to talk about your beauty routine.
It would be a brief conversation, to be honest.
There's a lot to talk about. Let's just talk about Single Father
to
start with, because it really is terrific. And this is one of the few roles that you've taken on in your native Scottish accent.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, nice to be able to do that.
Is it? It's a bit of a relief.
Well, it's just one less thing to worry about. I think for a piece like this as well, which is very naturalistic, which is, you know, it's got an almost documentary feel to it at times, I think. Yeah. So to be able to just be as close to oneself as possible, I think, is quite helpful in that set of circumstances.
It's really well directed as well, I think. It's a drama. So it's four parts, Single Father. Let's explain the premise. It's basically... Will you explain it?
Well, Dave and Rita are a very happy couple. They have four kids together. Dave also has a grown-up daughter from a previous relationship, and she has a child, so he's a grandfather. But this extended and slightly complicated family unit are very happily going along in life. Everything is pretty much hunky-dory until Rita is struck down in a cycling accident and killed. And really the story is from there on what happens next and how does Dave cope with being a single father. And then what gets thrown into the mix of that is the fact that that Rita's eldest child is not actually Dave's daughter, and then we'll find out she will want to find out who her father is, it all unravels. And then, of course, Rita's best friend, played by Saran Jones, and Dave start to have a slightly inappropriate relationship quickly.
But then I couldn't work out if it was inappropriate or not. I mean, it happens.
Well, I think
quickly.
That's what's good about the story, is that there are no black and whites about it. I think the morality of a situation like that is so difficult to be judgmental about, because
absolutely,
in the turmoil of grief, all things, in a way, all things are possible and excusable. And yet, at the same time, you've also got to behave appropriately for the children. And it's that's what I just loved when I read the script. I just thought it's so complicated and subtle, and it's not really like television drama, which tends to be quite binary in its approach to morality, and this is very, very complex.
I think that point when your character does start a relationship with Saran Jones' character so soon after the death of the love of his life, it does raise an interesting question as a viewer. And you're right, because first of all, it seems wrong, and then of course you think, well, given that his heightened emotional state, the volatility of the situation, who knows? And as you said, how can you be judgmental? And I think as well that situation is something that actually is fairly common, in that there are a lot of kids are now raised in single parent families, aren't they?
Sure, absolutely.
Something like a quarter, I think, of all children are raised in single parent families. Let's play a clip from the show. This
Great.
Is you were talking about. The stepdaughter of your character, and this is a conversation that the two of you have.
You're not my dad.
No, I'm not, no.
No? You don't even notice when I'm not at school. I want my dad. I want my dad, and I'm going to find him. I don't know how, but I am. Because I'm not part of you. And you don't care.
And there are several bits, I think, in the show that are quite moving. There's the bit when your wife dies.
Sure.
And we won't give it away, but there's a moment, your character's a photographer, and there's something he says, and it's almost a supernatural moment, not
it
quite,
is.
But you know
yeah.
what I mean.
Yeah.
And that's very moving. And there's a bit when you go to tell her, your stepdaughter, that her mum has died, and she's learning to play the violin. And that's so nicely directed.
Mm. I think the whole thing's beautifully directed. I mean, it's difficult when you've got four kids. You don't quite know what you're going to get there, because children are, they're their own beings, and why should they conform to a 12-hour filming day and three takes and a reverse, you know? And yet, I think...
Did they get bored?
Well, they might get a bit bored after take three, yeah. But Sam Miller, our director, rather brilliantly conceived a way of shooting the whole thing where the camera stayed quite far back. And we never were aware quite what they were shooting when. So close-ups were kind of snatched from quite far away. So it gives it a slightly documentary feel now and again. And it was a great way of we just came on and did the scenes. And none of us were ever aware when, oh, this is your close-up. So there wasn't, that hopefully removed a certain self-consciousness, which allowed the kids to just be.
Yeah.
Which sounds like they had to be sort of patronised into giving a performance, and actually they didn't, because they're really fantastic and natural.
No, but four kids around on set.
It could have been a nightmare, couldn't it? But they were very well chosen, very well cast, and actually they're such little troopers that they were just fantastic to work with.
So 85058, bacon@bbc.co.uk if you'd like to get in touch with the programme today. We're also asking, David wanted to be Doctor Who as a child, became Doctor Who. What did you want to be as a kid? But what are you now? Dear Richard, I wanted to be a racing car driver, then a car designer, but I'm a stamp dealer, says Simon. I didn't know that was a profession. I guess if you can make money out of it, it's a profession,
isn't it? Well, people like to buy the old, rare ones, don't they?
Buy and sell anything. It's a job, isn't
it? Yeah.
Dear Richard, as a kid, I wanted to be a customs officer at an airport. Really? But now I run a specialist sports shop. Richard, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a vet. However, now I'm actually a pest controller, killing animals rather than saving them. This is James in Southend. 85058 for more. And there are so many questions coming in for you, David.
Great, bring them on.
We will in a moment. It's 18 minutes past two. Lindsay Hipgrave, what's happening out there?
Thanks, Richard. Getting
here.
Hello.
You can sing a bit, can't you?
Is it me you're looking for? in the shower.
No, I heard you can. I've heard that you can sing quite well.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that an invitation?
Do you want to sing now, if you like?
I'm not without my band.
Let's look at this. So many questions. Let's do some ones on Twitter, because they came in first. Right, here's some that these were hours ago. HC says, did your experience on Single Father make you want to have children of your own?
Who said I didn't already want to have
right,
children
Right, HC.
Own? Yeah, you know.
So well, you do?
Well, I think it's something that one always kind of imagines is... Well, I don't know. I can't speak for anyone, but I've always hoped that that's something that'll happen in my life, yeah.
Jessica Carl says, what are your future TV and film plans? Now, I assume she means starring in rather than watching. That could be
although,
a long list.
You know,
your entire future television watching plans.
Well, I've just done two films, which will come out next
year.
Yeah,
I've heard about this.
Yeah.
Fright Night, a remake of Fright Night.
Yeah, I've literally just got back, still slightly fighting the jet lag from that.
Great.
So they're coming out next year.
Okay, that's marvellous.
Yeah.
Daryl Morris says, does David Tennant ever worry that being politically active can tarnish an actor's reputation?
I'm not particularly politically active. I mean, I express a preference if asked, but I don't particularly shout about it.
You voice over a Labour Party election video, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I remember I had David Cameron in here in January, first show after Simon left.
I think somebody played me this.
Did
yeah. Yes.
I read him a quote of yours.
Yes, yes.
I think I said to David Cameron, are you a fan of Doctor Who? Look, David Morrissey
David
is
Morrissey
here.
Just David Morrissey just slinks in. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
You're
good
very
to see
beardy
you.
Looking
look
there.
Look at you. You've got a bit of stubble as well. Yeah, so is Richard. Wow. Look at that.
Hello there.
Not a razor between us.
Hello.
Well, I mean, people really should go to the cameras now with David Morris and David Tennant sitting side by side in the room.
Oh, not for the first time.
No, you can do some screen grabs at that. Sure.
That's true.
I think we should have Hugh Bonneville in here as well. It's a sort of Sunday night TV. We should have a dance off.
Yeah, we're actually in competition this week.
We are. So,
are you?
You might see us arm wrestling any minute.
Thorn is on at the same time as Single Father.
I know.
Oh, that's tough.
Which
that's
is also
tough.
At the same time as Downton Abbey.
Yeah,
that's not its real name, is it?
Downton Abbey.
No. I thought it was called Downton Abbey.
Maggie Smith plays Petula Clark. That's right.
That's right.
That's what I mean. So we should have Hugh on and maybe all have a bit of an arm wrestle, cage fight,
a big wrestle.
That would be great, wouldn't it? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were rivals. I wouldn't have brought you in together.
No.
Listen, in these days of iPlayer and boxes that record things, it's all fine.
Sky Plus, I think you can say that.
Can you say that? You can. You're on Sky.
Yeah.
You're paid to say that.
Yeah.
That's your job.
Okay.
You said it on the BBC. You'll get a bonus from Murdoch for that.
There are other recording devices available on the market.
They're just not as good. Now, David Tennant, sorry, on the political thing.
Yes. I thought I'd wriggle out of that, but no.
I didn't forget. No. David Cameron was in here, and I said to him, are you a fan of Doctor Who? And he said, yes. And I said, well,
God bless him.
Doctor Who's not a fan of yours.
Right.
Now, I realise that's not an accurate, not a literal statement. I don't suppose the Doctor really has a political viewpoint.
Well, you could argue that, but go on.
He doesn't have a vote, does he?
No, he doesn't have a vote.
Actually, you're right. And Russell T. Davies, the Doctor, probably did have a political persuasion. Anyway, you're right. That's another conversation. Then I read your quote to him where I think you said you would rather that the Prime Minister was the smartest man in the room, I think, something like that. And it was an endorsement of Gordon Brown.
It was. Well, certainly Gordon Brown against David Cameron felt like, to me, the much preferable option. But, you know, listen, he's in there now, and for the good of all of us, I hope he's got it right. It's obviously he's having to make this whole what we do with the economy and where it takes us. He didn't get my vote, but he's in there now, so I wish him well.
Do you really?
Well, I'm not a fan of the Conservative Party. I don't like the general thrust of right wing politics. No, but I think in the heightened circumstances we ourselves, the country and the world find itself, let's hope that all the leaders in position are getting it right.
There was a quote. Colin Paterson, who's our entertainment correspondent, spoke to Oliver Stone today, and Oliver Stone was talking about David Cameron, and he said I like that guy's face. And then he went on to say that he wondered if actually David Cameron could achieve more from the right, if you like, some of the causes and issues of the left, but from the right. And I suppose that may be a reference to things like equality and tackling poverty and that kind of thing. Can you see the point he was trying to make?
Not vividly, but... like I say, I hope he's right, and I find David Cameron's version of conservatism preferable to Margaret Thatcher's. I just hope they're as different as he would have us to believe they are.
David Morris, you're a member of the Labour Party.
Mm-hmm. I am. Yeah.
Okay. Do you wish David Cameron well?
I wish the country well.
Yeah.
So what one wishes, I think the cuts at the moment are far too heavy, and I think they're targeting the wrong people at times. And I do think that there's a feeling that, you know, what one wants to do is cut back on people who are scrounging from the system and stuff, whereas I feel that the top earners are the people that, you know, are what you should be going for at times. But
I mean, we don't need to get into the nitty-gritty of policy. I suppose they would argue that's what they did with child benefit this week, wouldn't they?
They would argue that. Yeah, but I do think that the difficulty now, I think, is that sense of, you talk about right and left, and I think a lot of people have difficulty knowing what that is.
Mm.
You know,
yeah,
and it's that middle ground is where people are fighting over.
Mm. Yeah, I know. I mean, everything is in the middle now. I mean, You know that mainstream politics is dominated by the centigram, and someone like Ed Miliband can be described as red Ed.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's in no one's imagination is he
really
like
Michael Foot. It's quite
interesting
the Oliver Stone thing, though. I mean, that's really interesting that he's coming in and talking about David Cameron. Maybe he wants to make a film about him and Clegg.
Is it possible to achieve some of those cherished causes of the left from the vantage point of the right? And through, I don't know, I don't have an answer, I'm just saying, it's an interesting comment,
but I don't think there's anything in what I know of David Cameron that would suggest that that's what he's trying to do. I mean, it's a lovely fantasy from someone from where I'm standing, but I don't really see it.
Do you think?
I mean, I hope it's true. I hope Oliver's right. Mm-hmm. But you know,
I suppose do the Conservatives now talk more about things like poverty than they ever used to, for example.
Yeah, which and you know, and they've and they now the, you know the way they talk about issues like gay rights is a world away from where they were 10 years ago, and that's. I believe very positive, but it's still not who I would vote for. No.
Let's move on. Let's have some fun again. Sure. Although David, I wouldn't mind talking to you later about a little bit about Gordon Brown and
because
you play Gordon Brown, of course, and some of the comments you made about him. Yeah. Let's read out some more. I only got like through two, despite the fact we've had hundreds and hundreds of questions.
It all got quite serious,
didn't
Richard?
It? I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
It was like Paxman. I was a bit frightened.
I'm feeling
all man's Paxman.
I was really frightened.
You felt like Michael Howard.
That was something of the night about me.
I know. David J. O'Brien says, that was a great quote, wasn't it? Something of the night. David J. O'Brien says, David Tennant, how do you feel now when you watch Doctor Who?
I just enjoy it as a viewer now, and I'm thrilled by not knowing what happens next. Which is nice.
Is it nice to just watch it as a fan?
It is great, yeah.
And not know what's going to happen.
Yeah, because I had thoroughly enjoyed it while I was there, and we moved on. We handed it over in Rude Health, and that's very nice to see it thriving.
Do you wish you'd had Amy Pond as your assistant?
Well, Karen was in one of the stories with me. Karen came out to Rome with us and filmed a story with us, so I sort of did.
Okay. Were you, for the regeneration scene, were you actually there? Were you on that day?
Absolutely.
So that was you two were on set together?
Yeah, I walked off set as he walked on.
And was that, chronologically, was that the last thing that you filmed as the Doctor?
No.
Okay.
Not quite nearly, actually. It was. I think that was the Monday of my final week, so it wasn't far off, but it wasn't quite the last thing I did.
And was it weird watching Matt film the regeneration scene?
Well, I didn't really watch it. I did my bit. And then the camera's locked off so that he can move into the exact spot. He came on set, we took some photographs together, and then I went home. And he stopped.
Was that a deliberate decision to go home? Did you not want to see him film that, or were you just busy?
I didn't think he'd want me particularly, looking at the monitor going, he's going to do like that, is he? You know, I don't think that would be particularly helpful. I think his play was as well and diplomatic that I just shuffled off and left him to it.
Let's play a clip from when you two were together in Doctor
Who. Let's do that.
Which is when you both thought you were the Doctor.
Yes.
Was it called The Next Doctor? Was that the name of the episode?
It was called The Next Doctor, yeah.
Right, here we go.
I am nothing but a lie.
No. Info stamps are just facts and figures. All that bravery. Saving Rosita, defending London town. The invention, building a TARDIS, that's all you.
And what else? Tell me what else.
There's still something missing, isn't there?
I demand you tell me, sir. Tell me what they took.
Sorry. Really, I am so sorry. But that's an awful lot of luggage for one man. Because an info stamp is plain technology. It's not enough to make a man lose his mind. What you suffered is called a fugue. A fugue state. Where the mind just runs away because it can't bear to look back. You wanted to become someone else. Because Jackson Lake had lost so much.
Look at that, having a little giggle between yourselves as you remember filming that
scene.
Memories there.
Happy days.
Yeah.
And that was when there was all that speculation then about you then taking over as the Doctor.
It was. I couldn't even tell my kids about it. It was Russell who phoned me up and said, listen, you know, we're going to run with this, but obviously you can't tell anyone. The whole thing about Doctor Who is because it's such a phenomenon that, you know, this, you do the read-through and everybody agrees that they won't talk about it beyond that table, really, which is quite right. But this was... It was quite a long time before this one came out. So.
It was quite, well, I mean, it was all very timed very specifically because I was announcing that I was leaving and then it was a bit of a bit of sleight of hand.
It's called The Next Doctor. And then my kids kept saying to me, so, are we moving to Wales? I can't tell you. And they said, such and such asked me in the playground. And I said, no, I can't tell you. But, so that was all a bit weird.
But I remember when that part was being cast because it was like, well, you've got to make it look like this is somebody who would be a fantastic choice for this part. You know, it can't just be some... You can't just put shove Paul Daniels in it and for the joke. You have to the nation has to think, oh yeah, let's have him. So, you know, you need someone of Dave's calibre.
Wait, did Russell T. Davies rung you up about that? Are you saying that was his plan as a bit of fun to, start this rumour that you would
be Doctor
Who?
I think he knew that that was what was going to be coming at him, because the fact it was called The Next Doctor, it was Christmas Day, David. So he said, look, lots of people are going to be asking about this, so it would be great if you, you know, just didn't say yes or no. And I said, fine.
You bore it manfully.
Yeah, I'm very good at not saying yes. Missus will testify. It was that thing of just... having this kudos with my children was the best thing about it.
I had a really cool idea earlier, David Tennant.
Yeah.
Which is that, because it's science fiction and anything could happen, that you should be the next Doctor. Right? So, for the first time, it regenerates backwards.
Coming out of the shower and saying it was all a dream.
No, that's an interesting idea.
Listen, anything is possible, but I think the job is taken for quite some time.
I know.
Quite right, too.
In a few years. You could be the next Doctor. Isn't that interesting?
It's interesting. See? It might not be the most thrilling notion for the audience. They might, you know...
They've still got the costumes. Yeah. If the BBC cutbacks carry on...
That's true.
I mean,
that's could... true.
Yeah. Okay. That you didn't really bite with that idea.
No.
I had Russell Tovey in the other day, and because Russell T. Davies thought he could be a good Doctor Who.
Yeah.
I think he's a great actor. And him and her is brilliant as well.
Oh, it's terrific. It's a really good comedy, isn't it?
It's fantastic. Great writing, and he's wonderful in it.
He was saying he'd like to be the Doctor's assistant, so if they were to have a female Doctor next time, which I guess could happen, it's not a bad idea. With him, he said he'd like to play it as a chav assistant.
Right, right. Well, he'd be very good.
Let's take some news, come back to talk some more with David Morrissey and David Tennant, 85058.
I like the billing.
It's sort of like the two Ronnies.
Bacon at bbc.co.uk if you'd like to get in touch. Here is Justine Green. And David Tennant are here. They are in dramas that are going to be on television at exactly the same time.
What are the chances of that?
No way.
I would urge the listeners to watch both of them.
I would too.
Me too.
And put one on one telly and one on the other and run between rooms if you don't have any recording equipment. But that would be better for ratings as well. If
just get all your TVs
on.
Got
just put them all on. Me and David.
David Morrissey, you're in Thorn, which is which is dark and it's terrific. Is it directed by the same director as 24?
Yeah, Stephen Hopkins and Californication. And I'm sorry, last time I saw you, Richard, you were drooling over Natasha McElhorn. We were doing a press launch and she was around, and you were gone.
Was I a little bit embarrassing?
Oh, you were in another place completely. Are you following her around, trying to get your photographs taken with her? Do you not remember?
I do remember, yeah. She's so beautiful. She is, though, isn't she?
She's very beautiful, yeah.
And one of the few people that when I...
he's got all misty.
You're thinking about it now.
Look.
I hosted Sky One's autumn launch, and as part of that, we'd play clips of the programmes, and then the cast would come out, and I'd interview them in front of the press. So David and Natasha came out about Thorn.
Natasha, I might as well not have been that my friend. It was like, he only had eyes for her. I mean, going off on tangents all over the place you were. It was fantastic.
I almost forgot about you, because you sat next to me, so I'm asking Natasha lots of questions. After about 10 minutes, I know it's David.
Yeah, doing cartwheels in the background.
Playing the title character.
It was fantastic.
Do you really have any questions for you? I was just going, David, did you enjoy
it? Natasha. Yes.
More with David and David in a second. 85058 for your questions. Let's just get more on that story we just heard about, that an inquest has ruled that a fatal gunshot to the head of Barrister. Exciting!
There, we're there. From come on, girls.
We have
and it's causing big problems, especially at this.
What we're doing here is we're dipping into our sister station, Five Live Sports Extra.
Hello, Five Live Sports Extra.
Say hello to all their listeners.
A false start there. So this is the 100 metres final, the women 100 metres final in Delhi, and as I say, there are two English women, Catherine Endicott and Laura Turner. David,
I'm going for Laura. I think Laura's going to. Yeah, I think she's been training very well. I think, and she looks strong. I think she's got it.
On good form. On good form.
Yeah. I think so. She was great in the semis.
David, Laura or Catherine?
I'll go for Catherine. I've always been a fan.
Okay. So both of David's on there. In
other words, come on, Catherine, come on.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take Five Live Sports Extra out, because there seems to be a bit of a delay, and we'll come back to it in just a second. So much tension!
You build it up.
No.
There's an awful lot of antibacterial hand wash in this studio.
Yeah, there is.
Do you have particularly filthy guests?
You've not been on Richard's show before.
It's
what
to protect you
about?
From me.
That's
what it is.
Right.
You never know where he's been.
That's right. I actually don't know why. There is an awful lot in here, isn't there?
Who's in here before you?
Victoria, Derbyshire.
There you go.
Right, they're on the blocks. Here we go.
Third time this evening, ahead of the final of the women's 100 metres at the Commonwealth Games 2010.
Come on, Catherine.
And they're away first time, and it might have been Laura Turner, it might have been Sally Pearson, the favourite. Sally Pearson is the first to turn back, and she puts her hands on her head. She is convinced that it's her problem, and she's making her way now over towards her right as she walks back now towards the starters officials. And also Laura Turner might be in trouble here. There's been so much noise down at the start, and already Pearson looks as though she wants to make some kind of protest, because it was either her or Laura Turner who jumped the gun, and that should mean automatic disqualification.
So Laura Turner, who you backed, David Morrissey, could well be out after that second false start.
Too keen there, I think. Yeah. Well, let's wait and see. Let's prejudge.
Is that what you get? You get two. It's two strikes and you're out with the false starting.
Yeah, we're learning as we're going along here, to be honest. But that is the way it would appear.
As a Five Live anchor, had to know all this stuff.
I mean, yes, you're right, David, and of course I do.
Of course you do.
Of course,
you're just feigning ignorance to make us look good.
That's right. It's more inclusive to feign ignorance.
Where's that sport man? Get him back in here.
I do find that strange with the sport and news, that whenever I listen to the show, I always think that they're in a different room and that me and David can have a chat and you can have a chat. But actually, it all happens together. So, you know, we have to be very quiet when that's happening. I always find that very weird.
And they slip in the middle of your conversation. Yeah, you have to not blink.
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you that Laura Turner has been disqualified. So
disgrace. That is a disgrace.
That is a real shame. I mean, I guess that is heartbreaking. This is the Commonwealth Games, 100 metres final. You get all the way to the final. You're out there in Delhi and you get disqualified from the final for two falls. That's pretty tough, isn't it?
And there's a lot of noise down there at trackside. I don't think, you know, they're hearing the gun and all that.
I bet it's right.
I think it's
that
not...
That must be a properly, genuinely heartbreaking moment for her. So,
absolutely.
But also for you, David Morrissey, because you backed her. But Catherine...
No, but in all seriousness, I mean, you train for these events for years and years and years, and then, you know, that happens. I think it's pretty off myself.
Right, they're off now.
Oh, no, that's a replay.
That's a replay of the last false start. Right, let's talk amongst ourselves. Sure. We'll go back to that a little bit later. I'm sure we'll get some sort of result between now and 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, David Morrissey, you are in Thorn, which is a terrific drama on Sky.
Mm-hmm. And David said that about mine.
They are both really good. I mean, they're both really good.
You very different.
You've not seen each other's shows,
no,
actually.
No.
Yours is dark, isn't it? Is it based on roughly a true story?
Yeah, no, it's based on a book. There's books called by Mark Billingham. He's got this series of books about this detective called Tom Thorne. And I was doing a film in New Zealand, and it was a film called The Waterhorse, and I had to do a lot of green screen, and it was like pretty boring for an actor, green screen, although it was a lovely film. But I just read loads of books, and one of the books I read was Mark's, and then I googled him, and in one of his interviews he said if it ever came to screen he'd like David Morrissey to play the lead role. So I was like, oh, okay.
Very good.
And then I read the other books and they were brilliant. So
this, if anyone wants, if any writers want you to play a part, just mention you in an interview.
Pretty much. That's the type of tart I am.
Sure. Vanity will get you most
places. That's it.
Okay, now apparently this is a bit confusing. Laura Turner's going to run anyway even though she's got a red card.
What, at the side or something?
Let's hear a bit of the Five Live Sports Extra. Four,
and the favourite Pearson in lane number 7, the women's 100 metres at the Commonwealth Games 2010. And finally they get away, and it's a good start by Osayomi, and so too Sally Pearson. Turner is adrift at this stage. Tahisha Harrigan also in contention. Sally Pearson finishing strongly, but it's Osayomi. Sally Pearson dips and takes it on the line. 11.28 seconds. It's gold for Australia and for Sally Pearson. After all the rumpus down at the start, she won a reprieve when it looked as though she had full started. Even she believed she'd full started, but she's put it all behind her, and it's gold in the 100 metres to Australia and to Sally Pearson.
She's jumping up and down, Mike. She thinks it's hers, but I tell you what, the Nigerians will be protesting without a doubt. There was definitely some issue with the starting down there, but a very impressive run from Sally Pearson. She clawed back Oladomalo, and it was 11.28 to 11.32 for silver.
Right. There we are. At the very least, that was quite interesting.
Well, it did look like there was quite a lot of confusion around the start there, though, didn't it? I mean, I think there'll be some complaints being lodged.
So neither of the English runners won out of Catherine and Laura. Laura Turner ran, I've never heard of that, she ran anyway, even though she'd got a red card.
Yeah, that is very strange, isn't it?
Because I think you were saying, what happens if she wins?
Yeah, if she won that race and she was, you know, disqualified, that'd be... pretty harsh, wouldn't
it? Oh, she'd see that as some sort of moral
it's
victory.
Like that guy won the Grand National and he was off on his own and everybody else had been pulled back. The whole race had been cancelled. Remember that? And he won it. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Right, let's talk. Now, you guys have got to go at three, haven't you? Enough to have like 100 questions to get through. Yeah. Let's play a clip of Thorn.
Okay,
because we haven't played a clip of that and then we can talk some more and enthuse about it.
Okay.
Here it is.
So, you know, she's got a lot to come to terms with without some 6 foot something.
Three.
Detective standing over her bedside.
Thing is, Dr.
Coben,
we've got three girls just like Alison. Same bruising, same indications, only they're dead. So if there's any chance that she can communicate, you know?
Well, if she does communicate, it's going to be minimal. And there's no guarantee that she'll remember anything. It's very unlikely that she's going to regain any motor function. She'll succumb to an infection and she'll die in that bed. So I really hope she's not your only line of inquiry. You have to excuse me.
So I picked a clip there that features Natasha McElhone, David Morrissey.
Funny that.
Yeah.
Seriously, she might be the most beautiful person.
All right,
ever lived.
All right. God,
he's not leaving it, is he?
But she is.
You are excellent in the show, and I regret not asking you more questions about you playing the lead role at that launch the other week.
Now's your chance to redress.
I know, but it's a dark show, isn't it? As well, and particularly with the end of this first.
Yeah, the
episode.
Main thing that happens in this show is that there's a killer on the loose, who we think is just a serial killer, but actually what he's trying to do is he's trying to put women into a coma, into a locked-in state, and he succeeds with this one person.
Locked-in syndrome, it's called, isn't it? Which was the subject of Diving Bell and the Butterfly, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
and from that book, and all that. And she's in this state, and Thorne has a very complex relationship with this girl. She's the only witness he's got, but obviously he can get no information out of her, but he's quite brutal to her at times.
A point that we've made many times on this show, because Sky One has put so much into drama, is they're really now trying to compete, aren't they? They are putting as much money into their shows as terrestrial broadcasters.
I would say they're not trying, I'd say they are. I mean, I think their dramas, you know, from my point of view as an actor, and I produce this show as well, I mean, they've been hugely supportive of this from day one. So, you know, I think good competition is great for everybody. I think if BBC and ITV and Channel 4, if there's another player in the field, that's a really good thing. And for me, you know, they've been criticised for buying in drama in the past, and it's great to see them investing quite heavily in British drama for us.
So Eddie Marson is in there, Aidan Gillen.
Yeah, and Sandra Oh, who comes into the second Scaredy Cat, which is our second story
second
as well.
Story. So it's two sets of three, isn't it, as a drama? Right, so I would urge you to watch Thorn. I would urge you to watch Single Father, when that is on the television this weekend. Can I say something that does slightly annoy me with dramas at the moment on television, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is sometimes, and this happens particularly at the end of your first episode, mm-hmm. is there's a big cliffhanger, right? And you see the cliffhanger. This used to happen at the end of Doctor Who sometimes as well. And you think, oh, is he going to die? What's going to happen? And then it goes, next time!
Yeah,
and you see that everyone's all right.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, that's the advertising.
We moved them till after the credits in the end for that very reason.
But credits as well. Credits really annoy me now because actually people work so hard on dramas. They really work, you know, and you work hard on getting their names up there and then they're shoved to the side of the screen they're just there to trail the next show. And that really annoys me because you want...
You can't read them. It's impossible to read them.
A, you can't read them, but B, you know, all the people who worked on them, and sometimes the music is something that is taking you on to a next level for those credits and they just get shoved into the corner.
It is a consideration that, isn't it, that you sometimes break the tension.
Yeah, I think
in the next episode, everyone's
really
okay again.
Yeah, but then, you know, that's the thing. You're constantly in competition, trying to hook people to keep watching, and that's the danger, really.
We're asking on the text study here because David Tennant, you wanted to be Doctor Who as a child, and you became Doctor Who. We're saying to everyone else, what did you want to be as a child? But what are you now? Some of these are great. Some of them, I think, tinged with sadness as well. Dear Richard, I wanted to be an ice cream salesman. Now I'm a paediatrician, says Jamie in Glasgow. Marcus, I wanted to be a pilot when I was 5. Now I'm a pilot. Happy story, like your Doctor Who story.
Tick, tick.
Sharon says, I wanted to be a cattle driver in the Australian outback. I'm now a kitchen salesman. Michael You know, he's happy.
Yeah, we don't know what the emotional state of these people is when they make these admissions. This is no...
When I was a young lad, I wanted to be a streetlight cleaner. Now I've grown up and I'm an engineering consultant, but whenever I pass a man cleaning streetlights, I always glance up and wonder what might have been, says Ben in Manchester.
Very good.
It's quite moving.
That's very good.
He just wanted to go up in a cherry picker, that's
all.
Yeah.
Get up there. He lived on a dark street, that kid.
One day I dream of light.
Cleaner light.
Clean light.
Joe says to David Morris and David Tennant, your double act in the TV series Blackpool was gripping television. Something happened there that transcended ordinary television drama.
Thank you very much.
Any idea how it happened, and have you any stories that exemplify why it was so special?
I have one story that halfway through filming the Blackpool, they showed a little clip of what we've made so far, and David and I, was a crowded bar that they showed on, and David and I walked out the bar and got in the lift afterwards, and as the door closed, we both turned to each other. We're never going to work again. And we were
What was wrong with it?
Well, it was like a very rough cut and stuff. But I think
But also, it was quite out there. It was quite a high concept thing. We burst into song, and you know.
And you had to have faith in that. You couldn't be shy about any of those routines. And we really jumped in, and Sarah Parrish and David and me, we just decided just to go for it, which you had to do.
Yeah.
But it did become something quite
special. And then it did, and it was great fun to do.
But even in the edit, there was. Do we sing over the songs?
Do we just have the
original track, and there was a lot of back and forth to just get the tone just right. I think it could very easily have gone wrong, and then of course they did it in America, where it did go rather badly.
They took all the darkness out of it. I mean, I always thought of the role of Ripley that I played slightly like a Tony Soprano who sang and danced, and also lived in Blackpool. Yeah. But it had that edge to it. He was a very unlikable character, but in the end, you sort of liked him.
You're right, that's always a confusing relationship you have with Tony Soprano, isn't it?
And Pete Baker's writing, I have to say, was fantastic. Yeah. Great, great line.
Just before you go, because you made a pilot in America, didn't you, for it was called Rex Is Not Your Lawyer, which didn't get picked up.
Yes.
I saw an interview with you in the Radio Times where you were talking about that.
Yes.
Most pilots don't get picked up in America,
exactly.
Do they? It's a strange and expensive system that they have.
Yeah.
Do you want to make it in America? Is that your plan? Do you want to make a TV series in America?
When that didn't happen, I made some films there instead. So I don't really think that tactically. I just kind of go wherever the next interesting project comes from.
It's not put you off making, say, another pilot for another American television series.
I think it was interesting to see how that network television situation in America works, and I would go into any other situation with the knowledge I gained. You have to be very careful of what you say.
Do you mean they promised you a lot and gave you the impression that it would happen? And
It's a funny world.
Okay. I understand why you need to be careful and diplomatic. Thank you so much for coming in, both of you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Terrific. Bring Natasha McElhone next time.
Please. or just send her.
Thanks very much.
Thorn is on Sky.
Bombshell.
And Single Fathers on the BBC. Thank you very much. On digital and online.